we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October the 28th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
Our guest co-hosts, Shauna Smith and Daniela Reiser.
Hi there.
Hi.
And Bernie's here watching me in the control room.
Hi.
Welcome, everyone, and happy World Vegan Day for November the 1st. Today's show is dedicated to living the vegan lifestyle and demonstrating the power of change that can happen when a person's compassion and heart is opened up. We often talk about all the positive things about the vegan lifestyle on the show, but it's a fact that 70% of vegans and 86% of vegetarians will go back to eating meat, and this is because of the social challenges involved. So today we will be discussing some of these social challenges and offering advice to be able to empower you to live your truths and overcome these obstacles that you may face when wanting to live a life of minimal harm. Then for our feature interview today, we have an inspiring story to share. Mike Lanigan was, until recently, a cattle farmer in Uxbridge, Ontario. He bred and raised cows to sell for slaughter and consumption, that is, for beef. But then one day, he had a revelation and a dramatic change of heart. He needed to clear his conscience and save the cows that he cared for from their intended deaths in the slaughterhouse. He is now transforming the farmhouse garden animal home into an animal sanctuary for his 21 cows and other animals, and has converted to being an organic vegetable farmer. He'll be here today with his vegan teammate, Edith Barabash, to share their story about changing the world for the better. That interview is coming up in about 33 minutes, so please do stay tuned. But right now, Shauna has some tips for us on keeping animals safe at Halloween.
Yes, so there are a couple of great tips to keeping our companion animals safe this year. Number one, of course, is to keep them inside, please. You know, it's really traumatizing sometimes for pets to be outside with all of the fireworks that are going on and the kids in costumes. Like, it's really unsettling for them. So my advice would be to keep them inside and disable your door for that night, just so that they're not constantly being alarmed by it every, 2 minutes or whatever it is that the children are coming by. And also maybe keep them in a quiet room with some music or some TV on, so they're not super distracted. And of course, I mean, this should be number one, just in case your pets ever did run outside, regardless if it's Halloween or not. Please, please, please tag your pets with either a microchip or something similar. A really good tip is when you're decorating your house, to introduce your companion animal to a safe room for them, because, especially with cats in particular, they can be really alarmed with change, especially when it's, dramatic like that. So introduce them to a safe room that they can go to, and then decorate the house after that.
I have an idea for a safe room. Well, it's something that our dog, Penny, she was a poodle, she used to do, was when people were usually like fireworks, right? Like, they're so scary for animals. Whenever fireworks would come on, she would run into my parents' bedroom. That was her safe room, and stick her head under their bed with her big butt sticking out. So that was basically her safety, her comfort. I wonder if either of you, Daniela or Jen, have experiences like that with your cats.
My cat actually seems unfazed by them, but I definitely make sure that she's in before that starts to happen.
And yeah, mine, they hear the fireworks. They're pretty good with it. But they're safe places for sure underneath the bed. Like, I'll find all three of them under the bed if the fire alarm ever goes off. So
Another thing is, for cats in particular, try and bring them inside a couple days before and a couple days after Halloween. Just because, you want to get them used to having to stay in the house for a couple extra days. And then after, you know, like, you don't want anything happening to them. You know, people are cruel sometimes. They can hurt animals. That's actually a big reason why shelters don't actually adopt out any black cats in October and sometimes even September, because there are a lot of weird rituals that happen. People like to torture them, and it's really sad, but it happens. So please be aware of that. And just make sure, you know, you don't leave your candy out, you don't leave any decorations, or you don't leave your companion animals with any decorations unattended, because, you know, we all know they chew things, and they could end up choking.
And not good for animals, or at least dogs, to eat chocolate either, right?
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Don't leave that stuff out, because it can make a mess, and I've seen our dogs do that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, the last point here is... costumes. I know they look really cute, but make sure you let them try them on a couple days before to get them acclimatized to it. And just in case it's not comfortable for them, you'll know a couple days before. And not only that, for dogs in particular, if you are taking them trick-or-treating, which I wouldn't recommend, you need to be aware that other dogs won't be able to recognize when they feel threatened or anything like that, and it can actually cause an aggressive encounter by accident. So just make sure, you know, they can still wag their tails and all that stuff, and they're still comfortable enough so other dogs can recognize that they're not a threat. But other than that, those are pretty much all of the points.
Thank you very much for sharing that, and remember, that's for Halloween, which is coming up next Monday. So thanks for that, Shauna.
Start your week off the Aloha way, listening to Hawaiian music every Monday from 10:30 to noon right here on Co-op Radio. Aloha Monday, all Hawaiian music, all the time. That's Mondays from 10:30 to noon right here on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Aloha Monday. Aloha.
To events. We have the Halloween horror movie, We Dare You to Watch. What would you do if you found out that your worst nightmares were a reality? A 10-year undercover investigation reveals horrors beyond imagination. Get paid $10. Yeah, that's correct. We pay you when you make it to the end of the film. Are you up for the challenge? Seating and cash guaranteed is for 100 attendees, and snacks are provided. Make sure to be there tonight at 7 p.m. at the YWCA at 535 Hornby Street. Another event is the screening of Bloodlines. Join us at the Rio Theatre for the Canadian premiere of the feature documentary Bloodlines, which follows acclaimed environmental journalist and safari operator Ian Mickler and Rick Swayze, an American hunter, on their journey to uncover the realities about the multi-million dollar predator breeding and canned lion hunting industries in South Africa. Bloodlines is a compelling call to action and shows how you can get involved in a global campaign to stop lions being bred for the bullet. Director Bruce Young will be joining in person for the screening and will participate in a Q&A and panel discussion to follow. It is this Sunday, October 30th, doors open at 12 p.m. and movie starts at 12:30. Get your tickets in advance for $14 or $18 at the door. It's at 1660 East Broadway in Vancouver.
And our own host, Jen Dovell, will be there to ask some questions, right, Jen?
That's right. Take a drive up to Whistler between November 1st and 14th for a devilishly decadent vegan dessert challenge. Some of the chefs up in Whistler have been challenged for World Vegan Day to create and showcase their best vegan desserts. From pumpkin spice creme brulee to a s'mores cheesecake in a jar, diners will be able to try these decadent desserts and vote on Earth Save Whistler Facebook page at the start of the challenge. The following restaurants are participating: Stone's Edge Kitchen, Olive's Community Market, Alta Bistro, Cinnamon Bear Bar and Grill, Cure Lounge at Nita Lake Lodge, The Green Mustache, and Milestones. A big shout out to Nestor's Market and Vegan Supply for providing the prizes for the top three chefs.
I think it's a great idea myself. I saw a few of the vegan dessert photos online, and that makes me want to be in Whistler next week.
They look great. And it's a good, vegan option to the Vancouver Dine Out that happens every January.
Yeah, and I wish we had vegan options here, so maybe one day for that Dine Out.
If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you for the events. So we all know that the vegan lifestyle of living with minimal harm to other beings is a wonderful way to live. However, it is actually tough for most people to sustain. According to a survey that Faunalytics did, 70% of vegans and 86% of vegetarians will go back to eating meat. We all know the food is great, right? And we often talk about food here on the show, but it's something that's more complicated than that, that keeps vegans from staying vegan, and it's a social challenge. So today we'd like to discuss some of what those social challenges may be and offer some advice on how to overcome these obstacles. Now, Shauna, I know you told us a story before about a friend of yours who actually gave up veganism because of the social challenges. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. A couple weeks ago, I did my story to veganism, and he was the first vegan I'd ever met. Well, a couple of months ago, I checked in on him to see how he was doing, because I actually wanted advice, and he told me he was no longer vegan. And I asked why, and he told me because of social challenges was the biggest reason. His girlfriend is not vegan, I don't think any of his friends or colleagues are either. And it was just really hard for him to keep up with the lifestyle. And it made me really sad to hear it. But I mean, I understand, because if you've all heard my vegan story, it was one of the reasons why I went back to being an omnivore before converting back to veganism.
That's right. And, you know, this is a real issue. And the fact that so many people who decide to stop eating animals and animal products go back to it. You can, I mean, we were talking before the show, we've all known people who have done this. Yourself, Daniela, you made a Facebook post about this last week about you had been vegetarian at 22. And then why did you stop?
Well, I went vegetarian when I was 11. And I think I went vegetarian because nobody was vegetarian. Actually, the opposite. I didn't want to be like everybody else. And also because I thought animal products made me gain weight and all that kind of stuff. So with 22, I think because I did not have any ethical motivation or thought animals were sentient living beings, I, you know, gave in to peer pressure because everybody around me, the group I was hanging out with, all went to fun events that hardly had vegetarian options, and I thought, why not? There was no other reason for me. And that's why, I mean, today why I'm vegan is a completely different reason why I went vegetarian with 11.
So I want to say, too, that, yeah, I guess for people who don't really consider have the moral considerations so deeply ingrained into them, it can be really easy to feel like a social outcast, right? I have stories on Vancouver Vegans this week. Nick shared his nachos story with us. Did you all read that or no?
I can
tell you about it. So I think this story is perfect because it very much exemplifies like a typical day for any vegan who might be going out with friends who are not vegan. So Nick said, I have a close group of friends that regularly go out on the town for nacho night. When I was vegan, I kept going to these events, but I stopped eating the nachos. This was a surprisingly difficult social experience! He says, I would get my own appetizers, hummus, etc., but there was a distinct difference in the social atmosphere because I was no longer eating from the same plate as everyone else. To make it worse, nobody wanted to share my non-nacho foods. So talk about feeling like a social outcast, right? Like that's just one experience I've experienced. I mean, I'm pretty much in acceptance that I'm a social outcast, but I think it's always very important to actually be proactive and be positive in these situations. So what would you suggest, Shauna?
I don't know. I mean, for me, like I've told all of you, all of my friends are really respectful of my views. I try and take them to restaurants like Meat on Main or Meat in Gastown because it is really easy for them.
All vegan restaurants here that we're lucky to have in Vancouver.
Exactly. Or, you know, I will, if they're suggesting somewhere and if I look at the menu and literally all I can have is fries and salad, I'll ask to go somewhere else. And they usually say yes. And you know what? If your friends say no or they're being really pushy about it, then maybe you need to rethink your friendship with them, because if they're not going to support you with whatever you do, whether it's veganism or anything, then why are they in your life?
I think it's really important to be proactive about your eating choices because you don't want to be miserable. What's the point of you going out with friends for food and fun, right, when you're not having fun because you're eating fries and a plain salad? So I do think it's really important to step up and to choose a place that everyone can partake in. Another question I have even is just like, going out with friends and watching them eat meat, that's actually something I really try to avoid at all costs, or work colleagues, for example. How do you all feel about that? Do you, I mean, Jen, do you go out and watch people consume flesh?
No, I typically only eat out with my vegan friends, and I kind of only hang out with vegan animal rights activists. That's mostly because all day, every day, if I'm not working my paid job, I'm doing activism. So I actually go out with Bernie and Daniela a lot. It's been nearly 2 years. Yeah, it's been nearly 2 years since I decided to go vegan, which was inspired by watching the documentary Earthlings. The film called me into action to save these voiceless victims of senseless human domination. And I think about their suffering every day, and I'm unable to look at someone's plate of food or animal flesh or secretions in the grocery stores without feeling sadness for what they're being put through for selfish human desires. So I do try to avoid meals with people who aren't vegan. I did take a liberation pledge with my family, and they know that I refuse to sit around a table which has any animal products on it. In the past, they have said, okay, it's meatless, you can come here, and it's got cheese and milk. And there's so much horror in those industries. That's not good enough for me. So I don't attend certain family events, including last Thanksgiving. And I've offered to pay for and make the entire vegan meal for these events. I've only been allowed to do this on one occasion. And to be honest, I've spent much less time with my family since I went vegan because their ignorance and apathy bothers me. I've asked them all to watch Earthlings, and I've been offered one family member. I offered one family member $50 to watch it. None of them will. My mom is almost fully vegan now, and she's exhibited such intelligence and common sense and compassion on the subject, which has brought us closer together, and she even participates in activism with me. My two brothers and sister both have kids, and they refuse to go vegan, and I'm always surprised that people who have children seem to be the least willing to go vegan, especially since we now know that meat causes cancer, dairy causes disease, and animal agriculture is causing the destruction of our planet, which is where their children should have a future. One of my brothers is actually a cattle farmer, and he is very understanding and logical about my veganism, which I was surprised about, and I was worried to talk to him about this. And I'm so thankful. I just love him so much. I don't see him very much since my life is hectic and he lives in Nanaimo, but when I go to his house, he accommodates my dietary needs. He doesn't heckle me, and he actually seems interested to know about my choices.
I have another story. I also don't go out with anybody who eats animal products. And I think until you get to that point and confidence to do so, because, you know, I feel my friends are not going to leave me if I don't go eat dinner with them, like the good friends. But what I did before doing this was I would either call ahead or I would go and talk to the manager of the restaurant and say, this is what I eat. And someone told me that if you do that, the chefs, they feel challenge. They get something new and say, I'm going to create you a dish. And I've had dishes come my way that people said, I want this too. I've created dishes that are not on the menu that people next to me at a table said, I want to have what she's having. So,
and maybe that will become a menu item.
Exactly. You never know. So get the courage, be proactive, talk to people beforehand. So when you're there with your friends, you don't have to be, can I get this one without the cheese, without the egg, without the bacon, you know, on and on.
And you still get charged full price.
That's awesome. Because if I know I can't eat anything at a restaurant that I'm going to, I eat before I go, and then I just order a drink when I get there.
And just challenge them.
That's what some people do too. But I really like the idea of what Daniela has suggested, and I've seen it suggested before, is to get them to make a meal that you can eat. That's a great idea. Have any of you ever been singled out as the butt of jokes for your veganism?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Who said of course? Daniela?
Oh, I did.
Jen, okay.
Yeah.
Elaborate.
Well, I get called a hippie. Mm-hmm. And I mean, every comment that comes my way is just showing someone's ignorance. And I say to them, you know what? Animal cruelty isn't funny to me. And I'm fine being singled out. I've been kind of the black sheep my whole life. And I think if you're the black sheep, you're probably doing something right, because most of society is doing something wrong. They've got their heads in the sand.
That's definitely me too.
Yeah, you too. Yeah. You mentioned that earlier, right?
Oh, I'm totally the black sheep of my family. I am. Yeah. You know, I'm a weirdo and I'm proud of it. But having said that, I really feel that a lot of people don't want to identify with being a weirdo, as I just called myself. Right. I mean, Shauna and Daniela, do you want to be considered as normal? I think a lot of people, I think my sister who's listening live right now, she's a vegan, I think she doesn't want to stand out in a crowd. She doesn't want to be the weird one. And she just wants to blend in. So that can be difficult. So what are your suggestions for how people can cope? I think it's really important to be strong-willed. And how do you get there?
Well, what I was going to say to your question about do I want to be considered normal, my answer is no. I'm sure you're all familiar with the word basic. I don't want to be basic. I want to be different. I don't want to be like everyone else. And, you know, veganism isn't something that makes me feel different. It's something that makes me feel empowered and happy. And when you choose it for the right reasons, it shouldn't feel like a chore in terms of being proactive so you never go back. I mean, community is one big thing. Like, yeah. I felt alone for months, but when I started up with the Vancouver Vegans and started volunteering at this radio station, I feel like I have a community and I feel like I can turn to someone when I need help.
And you're a new vegan.
Exactly. I've only been vegan for 6 or 7 months coming up.
That's a great example.
You know, like, I found that at the beginning it was a little bit hard. I'm a little bit luckier because I do have a supportive family. They always eat vegan with me. And my sister has been vegan for 3 years. But, you know, outside of that, my ex-boyfriend was not vegan, and it was a reason why we broke up. And his friends were not vegan, and they always made fun of me whenever we went out. I actually stopped hanging out with them because I couldn't handle it anymore. And when I found Vancouver Vegans, I found it to be really supportive and really a really positive experience for me anytime I needed help with anything.
That's a really great online group to be a part of. And I want to say, too, it's called Vancouver Vegans because it's for people in our city here in Vancouver, but I'm sure that all other kinds of cities have them. And then there's the Facebook group Vegans United for perhaps people in South Dakota, like my sister, who don't have that community there. So I think online community these days can be so important. Daniela, how do you find community in your veganism?
Yeah, it's very important. And to me, again, if we say, do you want to be normal? I mean, what's the norm? If we break that down, the norm is cruelty. Like, eating animals is cruelty and suffering. So no, I don't want to be normal. But I try to live my life as normal in a society so people think, oh, she's just like me, but the only thing she changes is her clothes, her makeup, her, you know, everything involved with animals. But I always find, getting back to the joke part, the ones that make the most fun of me are those that are the closest to me, which is so interesting. Like, my dad will think it's a religion, or, oh, you're pushing your views, and then he'll say something that is just insensitive. But I do believe we have a chance with that, because the more they make fun of us, the more I kind of feel like we have an option to change them.
Well, because they're opening the conversation. And once they do that, you're not the one that's bringing it up. They are.
Exactly.
So what are they going to say? Oh, you always bring it up? No, it's you, actually.
Exactly.
So
I also find they want to shut that conversation down as soon as you say something logical. The person that I work with, I won't say who, told me that vegans are weak and that you can't get all your nutrients from a vegan diet.
He just needs to be educated.
Because we were at work, I didn't say much other than you're wrong. And later on that night, I sent him a link to vegan bodybuilders. And their bodies are better than his. And I'm not saying his isn't great. But it also included their dietary plans. And he didn't respond. But I do find that when people say, as you just said, Daniela, that we are pushing our views on people, I do get compared to pushy religious people when I talk about veganism. It's not the same at all. We are pushing our values on voiceless animals. We are pushing our desires for the taste of their bodies on them. Mm-hmm. We have the ability to have more dominance over them because of our intelligence, we say. And it's just completely wrong. And for us to be vegan animal rights activists, and not all vegans are animal rights activists, there are some quiet vegans out there that will never speak up about it. We are the heroes. I'm just going to say that. Okay. I've had vegan friends who have never told me why they were vegan. And if they had told me all the details of what happens in slaughterhouses, I would have gone vegan years ago.
Right. And regarding religion,
I had a conversation with a meat eater, and he said, oh, what is the difference between this and religion? I said, well, actually, religion tries to show you something that doesn't exist and that you should believe in. And veganism is something that nobody wants to believe in but exists.
That is a great statement.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
I want to mention too, I mean, Shauna, you mentioned love relationships. That's a really big topic, is how do you align yourself with someone who you have a deep connection with but who lacks sharing the same core moral values of yourself, right? And I don't want to really get into that too much today other than to mention it, because we are planning a big segment about that on Valentine's Day next year, right?
Yeah.
So we'll talk all about it then, but I just wanted to acknowledge that that's a huge part of the equation here, social situations. Also, perhaps being vegan in the workplace where you need to perhaps keep a low profile and keep your job security. Perhaps that can be another segment for the future as well. So I wanted to close with, really, I think it's so important that we need to remember why we're doing this when we might feel pressured and we might feel social pressures. So how does being vegan make you feel, and why are you committed to this way of living, Daniela?
I am committed because every day I make a choice, I don't think ultimately about myself anymore. I think about the victims. This goes from what I eat, what I buy, where I travel. Like, there's so many things. And if that's my guiding force, is thinking of others, and this is not just animals. I mean, this goes beyond just animal rights. It's human rights. And it makes me feel empowered. I feel I'm the first time in my life that I make the decisions, not some advertising, not my friends and family. It's me. And that's what makes me feel actually the best I've ever felt.
So it makes you feel empowered as a person and as an individual, and you're not just going along with the flow of society. That's
exactly
what I'm hearing here. What about you, Shauna? How does being vegan make you feel? Why are you committed to this way of living?
I mean, I would agree with Daniela completely. You know, of course it's the animals, and of course, like, I don't want to, you know, contribute to animal suffering or human suffering, because there's a lot of human suffering that goes around with that. And like I mentioned last show, I don't want to not know where my own thoughts came from. I don't want to be influenced by propaganda that I've grown up with, that I've been told to think. I want to have my own thoughts. I want to be, you know, have my own brain where I can think things, I can be curious, I can be intelligent, and I can want to learn about things that exist and not things that I'm told that exist.
Yeah, I always say, when I've told my how I went vegetarian story when I was a teenager, I always said I went vegetarian when I started to think for myself, which was when I was a teenager. Pretty late, huh, to start to think for yourself.
I don't know. Better late than never.
And finally,
still haven't, and they're much older.
Yeah, very quickly here, Jen, how does being vegan make you feel? Why are you committed to this way of living?
Well, as a privileged human being, I feel that activism is my rent on the planet. I can save animals by speaking on their behalf, and I've turned many people vegan. And for those who say to us, well, what about humans? I'm an activist for all causes. It's possible to be vegan and still fight for other causes. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I like this quote by vegan psychologist Dr. Melanie Joy. She says, "We are living a truth in a society that pressures us to conform to a very, very violent norm. And that's difficult to do. And we need to know that we have each other." So I think, to conclude with those thoughts, I think moral support is key. You need to find community. You need to know that you're not alone. That's why we're here at Animal Voices every week, to empower people and to educate. I think it's so important, when we face obstacles, to remember why we are vegan, to remember that we are doing this for the peace of all beings on earth. And when we live our truth and act according to our morals, we can all be more at peace in the society, and we know that we're doing a good thing. So that's all I have, and now we have some news.
Yes. To the news, a longtime bureaucrat who helped write animal welfare laws in Ontario has been hired by two nonprofit organizations to perform a deep dive into the agency charged with enforcing those laws. ZooCheck Canada and the Animal Alliance Canada have hired Mike Zimmerman, who worked with the Ministry of Community Safety and Correctional Services for decades before retiring last month, to lead an investigation into the Ontario Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Zimmerman believes that we have a very good animal welfare laws, the OSPCA Act, but his concern is that it might not be enforced effectively or with accountability. The OSPCA is a registered charity that enforces animal cruelty laws across the province and has police powers under their act. It receives $5.5 million annually from the ministry to help cover its enforcement cost. Zimmerman believes that we should have more transparency and accountability. The fact that the OSPCA is not subject to freedom of information legislation is an example of this society's lack of transparency. Recently, animal rights activists have been disappointed in the lack of intervention of the OSPCA in regards to the abuse and neglect towards the animals at Marineland Zoo and Aquarium, among other serious animal abuse cases. To the second news story is a recent released undercover investigation performed at Abbotsford Lilydale Turkey Slaughterhouse by the animal rights group Mercy for Animals reveals frightened birds painfully shocked with electricity, cut open while still alive and conscious, and scalded to death in vats of hot water. Mercy for Animals has performed numerous undercover investigations in both Canada and the U.S., which have been very effective in exposing the legal yet inhumane treatment of animals in our agriculture industries. And I also went to the Mercy for Animals press conference, where they were talking, obviously, about this case and showing these graphic footages. Has anybody seen it?
I did watch the entire thing, and because I've seen Earthlings, it wasn't new to me, but I want people to take from that that that's legal practice.
It is.
That's and not one farm that did something wrong.
Exactly. And I was at a restaurant the other day where I overheard someone else talking about that. And
I just
heard someone say, you know, I'm vegetarian. And if I hadn't seen that, I would have become vegetarian right away. And the other girl was just like, I can't hear it. I can't see it. No, don't tell me. And it's like, but if you eat it, you should watch it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so tired of hearing people say, I don't want to hear that because it'll change my food choices or it's too traumatic. We all watched Earthlings and we went vegan because of it, and now we're activists.
And if you see these animals are living beings, and they're like, people, please, if you know someone who eats it, just try to make them to watch it.
Exactly. Well, now we have our feature interview. I'm really excited about this. When I heard about the news story, I was so full of joy, I was crying. So today we're featuring a story out of Uxbridge, Ontario, a town situated in a beautiful valley 64 kilometers north of Toronto. This is a story about a cattle farmer turned sanctuary owner and the employee who encouraged him to have a change of heart. Mike Lanigan of Farmhouse Garden Organics had been a cattle farmer for over 20 years. Recently, he had a calf who was born prematurely and was smaller than his son's 8-week-old puppy. Through the process of caring for this calf, a light bulb went off in his head, and he realized that he didn't have the heart to send this calf to the slaughterhouse in 2 years' time as planned. He then decided that if he was going to save the calf, he would also need to save the rest of the cattle on his farm. Edith Barabash, an employee of the farm who works the till at the farmer's market, is a vegan and is working toward a law degree to become an environmental lawyer. Mike tells me that Edith has had such an influence on him with her gentle encouragement toward a compassionate life. Edith is planning to help Mike turn the farm into a sanctuary for the cows, and they will continue to sell organic produce to the farmer's market and to wholesalers in Toronto. Mike will now need to raise approximately $20,000 per year for the hay for the cattle, as well as make up for the loss of income from cattle sales. Donations have been pouring in, and we hope they will continue to do so. We're fortunate to have Mike and Edith on the show today, as they're very busy doing the fall harvest and preparing for Tuesday's annual potluck dinner at the farm, where they share much of their produce with the community. Welcome to the show, Mike and Edith.
Thank you very much.
So great to have you here. So I have a few questions for each of you. Who wants to go first?
Oh, let me go first.
Okay.
Sure.
Mike, my brother owns a small cattle farm, and I spoke to him once about transitioning to a sanctuary. What advice do you have for him and others like him who may be resistant to change?
Well, this is a very uncharted territory. When I got this crazy idea, I had never heard of it happening anywhere else in the world, and I found out since there's a lady in Texas that did it, and Rowdy Girl Farms or something, and so it's brand new, and it wasn't an easy thing to do, and I know I couldn't have done it without Edie's help, and it it's not easy. It's easier to do what you've always done. You raise them up to 2 years, and you send them off in a truck, or you sell them in packages. So this is something new, and we've done a lot of struggling, and Edie is really good in between the different parties to make it work. And I know that we could never have pulled this together without her youthful enthusiasm and her gentle, compassionate nature, you know, when, but it'd be hard. It's hard to do this change because it's so new. And, it's rewarding because everyone except my beef customers have been just so supportive. And, but we're going to make it work. But I'd give your brother better advice in a year or two when we get it all sorted out.
Okay, maybe I'll have you talk to him. Can you tell me how exactly Edith influenced you to make this transition? How long has she worked with you, and what was her approach?
Well, she started working with me. Gosh, I think she kept bringing by a resume every month when she was about 13, and I think she started working for me, and she might have been 14, and. You know, I didn't know she was vegan at the beginning, but it turns out that all of she is and all vegans are, and she was never that kind of a loud voice. It was just a gentle whisper in the background, and I mean, I think it was pretty good of her to be able to. We were at a farmer's market, and she would sell all the vegetables, but then she'd also sell all the beef cuts, and she'd. She'd deal with the customers about which cut was tough and which one wasn't, and she'd just kind of giggle when they say, "Well, which one do you like?" She's just that gentle little whisper in the background. And the same with my customers at the market. The customers that I have great respect for, the well-educated, the soft-spoken, real foodies, the ones that are into to raw food and veganism. So passionate, so dedicated, and it's all of their voices together kind of come together. After 20 years of listening to them, you start kind of thinking that there may be other ways to do it except the ways we've always done it on this, you know, on this very conventional farm that goes back almost 60 years.
And what has the response from your family been like? You mentioned to me on the phone the other day you've only eaten about 2 pounds of hamburger meat between all of you in the last couple of months, I think you said?
Yeah, in the last year. I mean, that was pretty neat. I had, it was my little son. He was 5. He's 8 now. And he asked me what it was on his plate when we're having a roast of beef. And I said, well, it's beef. And he said, well, that's cow, isn't it? I says, yeah. He says, our cow. He says, I'm not eating that. and so... He was really hardcore. He wasn't going to touch it. And so Annie, my wife, had to always prepare a couple of different meals if we were going to have beef. So she just slowly stopped cooking beef. And we really didn't miss it. And so, I mean, that's different. I mean, my young family, I've got 2 younger kids. They're just fine with it. But my older boys were hard on me. They were... Yeah, they were mad at me. They're my 2 old boys, older sons. They're 23 and 25, and they work for me. They do the mainstay of the work. I'm in the latter part of my career. I'm 60, so I'll be retiring in 2 to 5 years and let them go wild. And I kind of did it without any planning. This was something we didn't... I didn't sit down and organize and have meetings and stuff. I just had this flash of an inspiration, and I thought, wow, I bet Edie could help me with this. And I mentioned Edie, and then she made a little video, and it happened really quick. Everyone got on board quickly. The support was immense, and there was no going back. And
awesome.
And I even had orders for beef out there, and I had to tell people, well, sorry. I says it wouldn't be in good form. I says it stopped. It's finished.
I love
and
you.
We stopped. I a year ago we had hundreds of meat chickens. We had hogs. I have horses and my cattle, and we've stopped it all. I mean, our first idea was just to save the cows, but then Edie said, "Well, you know, Mike, you can't just save one species and kill another one." And it's so
true.
Very true. And so we just stopped it all. And gosh, I have one customer that drives. Now, you might not know where Wawa is, but it's about a 14-hour drive north of me, and she'd drive down here once a year, down and back, 14 hours down and back to get chicken and pork and beef from me. And I'm not sure she's ever going to talk to me again.
Maybe she'll just go vegan. But, that's easier.
Exactly.
You know, and I have these dedicated customers because of the way that we raised our meat before. Is we raised it with as much compassion as we could, and my dad did too. We were so careful to give them everything they needed, to not make them afraid at the end, to truck them with care and compassion, and they would just step off to heaven without knowing it was coming. And my customers wanted that, but we've taken it a little step further where they'll just go when their time's up. And I'm good with it. Some of my rest of my family, they're, you know, my sons, they're coming in tune with it. But they wouldn't have come in tune without Edie in the middle to help comfort that change. Because, you know, they're beef farmer sons, and they said, well, Dad, what am I going to do? Go to the grocery store and buy beef? This is crazy. And I said, well, yeah, if you have to, you will. And but Edie's been able to figure out solutions to all the things that troubled them, and I think it's just going to be just fine.
I think so, and, too, and I have a question for you. What do you think about you going vegan one day?
Well, you know, I mean, a year ago I would have just laughed it off, but I've got some really dear old hardworking farmer friends that have done it, mainly for health reasons, and it's a big adjustment, but you know, a year ago I would have laughed, and now I sit there and I kind of give it that quiet little thought, you know. And when I got a buddy that's, you know, an old smoker and a drinker and a partier, and then all of a sudden he cuts it all out, becomes vegan, and you know, you start listening to everybody around you. And I, you know, we are changing the way we eat all the time. And it's something that you have to progress to slowly, and you know, when you're completely ready for it. My wife is. She's trying really hard.
Good.
And that's because of a few of her friends are really good vegan chefs.
Great.
And whenever she goes to some potluck and there's some real, really special meal there, she goes, well, you know, she tries to do it. And she's doing a good job at it. And but there's a lot of adjustment. There's a lot of work. But, you know, when the cook turns vegan, this old farmer just might slip into that, you know, into that nature.
There are five people in the studio today with beaming smiles, and I think two of us have tears in our eyes right now from your story.
Wow.
So let's move on to Edith's questions. Edith, are you there?
Hey, yes, I am.
So why were you so persistent about working on Mike's farm? You're vegan. He raised animals for slaughter. Most vegans would never want to work where they have to sell meat or even be part of falling in love with an animal that they know one day will be killed.
Yeah. Well, I did apply to work for him at the market many times before he finally agreed to hire me. So, yeah, I was pretty persistent about that. But honestly, I was just always very interested in organics and sustainable agriculture. So working at the market and eventually interning for him was something that was so exciting for me. And I didn't really pay attention to the fact that he sold meat on top of veggies at first. I don't think I even fully realized it back then. It was a while ago. Like, I just started getting into veganism, and I didn't really put together the fact that I would ever have to witness these cows getting sent off. But needless to say, the first time I did experience one of the cows being sent off, it was a really sobering experience for me. And I know a lot of vegans wouldn't want to associate with some farmers or would distance themselves from people that they don't agree with, and I understand that. But even though I am an extremely passionate, ethical vegan, I always had this very strong, unwavering respect for Mike, because I always knew what kind of a person he was. He's so hardworking and passionate and just trying to earn an honest living. And I really always had nothing but respect for him. And I think working for him paid off in the end. So.
I feel the same way you do. My brother's a cattle farmer, and I don't have any malice toward him. I love him, yeah. And he's working hard for his family. And, of course, I hope to veganize him one day. Maybe you can help me. Did you ever talk to Mike?
We'll work together.
Did you ever talk to Mike about veganism? And if so, tell us about your approach.
Yes, yes, we did, especially this past year. I was traveling this summer, so I wasn't working for him for a couple months. But before that, I remember we had a lot of chats about my lifestyle. Every Saturday after the market, we would talk about things like why I'm vegan, how I feel about the idea of ownership of farm animals. And I remember one conversation in particular we had about how odd I find it that we breed animals into the world with an execution date already planned for them. And it wasn't ever really about me trying to convince him to do anything. I never expected anything like this to happen. He would just be curious about things, and we'd have conversations. And in terms of my approach, I'm a pretty timid person, and I like to assume the best in people and like always give them the benefit of the doubt. So I usually just gently explain my opinion on things. And it's funny, Mike always describes my approach as like whispering in someone's ear until they listen. And I am absolutely unwavering in terms of my morals, and I will always speak out, but it's always kindly.
Good for you. That's awesome. And what's your current and future role with the sanctuary now?
Well, the plan is for me to be the owner of the sanctuary once we figure things out legally. As of now, I run the social media aspect. I do fundraising, gathering donations, getting the word out. I'm also figuring out the legal stuff. And I'm currently designing a website with a wonderful volunteer that we have, and designing more merchandise to sell. I am a full-time student right now, and I live a bit far from the sanctuary, but I come as often as I can to give the animals some love.
Great. And in your area, is it a large animal agriculture community? And if so, are you concerned about social pressures or feeling outcast from that community?
No, I live in Thornhill, so it's not really an animal agriculture or agricultural community at all. It's pretty suburban. That struggle is mostly Mike's. And honestly, I've experienced nothing but kindness and support from vegans and non-vegans alike.
Does anybody else have any questions for Mike and Edie?
Well, I just have something. I don't know. Do either one of you know about Bob Comis, like B-O-B, say C-O-M-I-S, Bob Comis, a hog farmer, former?
No, sorry, what's the name?
Bob Comis.
Oh, yes, I have heard of that. It's the last pig, right?
Exactly. So maybe show that to Mike, because I think same with us that we need a community. Like, I wonder what his take would be on Bob.
Can you tell our listeners? Because I don't even know who that is.
Bob Comis? Yeah. So, okay. So he used to be a hog farmer, or a pig farmer, and he had the same thing happen to him where he thought, you know, I take care of them. I love them. I give them the most respect. I send them off. But each and everyone is an individual. And then he did, he's doing a documentary that's coming out hopefully by the end of this year or next year. It's called The Last Pig. And there's other farmers that would relate that what Mike's going through. So, yeah.
Mike, what do you think about that?
There, I had dead air for the last 5 minutes or so. So I just came in about 8 seconds ago.
Okay.
So I've just heard about the pig farmer. And we've always raised pigs here, and I can attest to the fact that they are real characters and really smart. And I think a lot of the farmers that raise them just really try not to think about it.
Exactly.
Because it's really easy to get close to them.
Can you tell us a story or maybe even a few stories about how animals have some sentience and intelligence that we might not know about if we don't spend much time with them?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the same. I mean, people are often easy to save a horse because people ride horses, but the cows and have the same personality. They have different traits. I mean, if you work with an ox and you love it as much as your horse, and we raised a pig once, actually in a cabin I lived in Northern Ontario. It was given to a friend of mine at a pound, and the farmer said, "Oh, it's not going to live," and it grew up to be 585 pounds, and it used to fight with the dogs to get near the wood stove, and it always won. And you know, it never made a mess in the house except it rooted around and pushed things. But It was as smart or smarter than any dog we ever had, and not as cuddly, and but it certainly gave us lots of good conversation, and you can get to love any animal, and I think a lot of the farmers I know, even the old guys, they really treat them with great love, and there's just a spot in their brain they shut off because they know it's the way you make your money, and you've got to bring money in on a farm to pay your bills. So it's always been the way that they would go off to slaughter, and but that's not the easy part,
right?
You know, and every farmer that I knew that I had respect for treated each and every animal with immense love, and especially with the little ones. And my dad would sometimes, when I was a boy, he'd have a calf behind the wood stove in the kitchen, all bundled up in some of his nice blankets, trying to keep it from dying, you know, from being born in the off season.
Right, and isn't that interesting that I always hear, and I actually love, and I know I grew up on farms, and my families were too, that the love is there, and I love that you say that they have to shut this out, because when they don't, they become who you are becoming or who you have become right now. And I hope that you and Edith both will show the journey along the way for everybody else to follow. I think this is such a powerful message for you and a chance, because you're one of the pioneers. In 20 years from now, we're going to have way more farmers turned animal sanctuary. And I think you're going to set a presidential case.
And it was just a little flighting idea. And that's special. No, we're privileged. We're lucky, and I'm really lucky to have Edith there to be able to do it.
Yes, so, for sure.
I feel very blessed.
And I bet in the beginning with this idea, you must have hesitated thinking about the financial loss. I mean, I don't know if you're able to say this, but I imagine your cattle brought in quite a bit of your income compared to the vegetables you were growing.
Yeah, I mean, we would usually send eight animals off in a year, and I usually would bring in about $2,500 per animal, and the butcher would get $500 or $600. So they were $2,000 per animal is what I would expect to get, and there's going to be some adjustment there. But I think if you added up everything, you know, the producing of the hay and stuff, I don't know, and you know, the work we did, I'm not sure at the end of it all whether there was a lot of profit. It's hard to add that up, you know, the time you spent fencing and things. But and it's brought up to me every time we're trying to fix a machine and there's not quite enough money. They said, Dad, you know, at this time of year we would have had six more animals done at the butcher shop and we would have been able to fix that tractor. So, but this is just the beginning stage, and I try not to think about it because I've never done anything in my life for money. The money has always come. There's always been enough, and I'm very rich. I just don't have a lot of money, and it's not my first thought is about the money. As long as we're covering the bills, and Edie assures me that she's going to be able to do that, and I'm not trying to make any money. I've told Edie, I said, I don't want any of the money. I said, you just pay for their feed, and
you
that's
seem
all
very
we're trying
genuine.
To do.
You and, seem very genuine, and we want to help you, and I know that you're not in this for the money, Mike, but to be honest, you do have to raise $20,000 a year for the hay alone, and we want to help you. So where can people give donations right now? And it's not about the money. It's because we want to support someone who's doing the right thing.
And I even told Edie, I don't even want to think about it because I didn't want someone to think it's a farmer in got a new scheme. I've had people on the street. There was a little thing in the newspaper in my local little town here. We've got like a 5-page newspaper, and I've had people in the street say, oh, you've got a new scam, Mike. You've got another new way to make money. And I just, oh, gosh. And I wanted Edie to be sure. I let Edie take care of all of that, and because I didn't want to have my hand in the bank account. So
okay, Edie, where can we send the money?
Edie would be best to answer those questions.
Go ahead, Edie. We just got a couple of minutes left here.
What was the question?
Well, we know that our listeners love animals and we love stories like this. And of course, it's not about the money. It's about helping someone who has made the right choice right. with our wallets. Where can our listeners send money to help buy the hay for the cattle and pay for their expensive vet bills that will be coming up and everything else?
Oh, well, right now we have a Facebook page going. It's called Farmhouse Garden Animal Home. If you just type that into Facebook, it should pop up. And we have a PayPal account linked to that. Or you can send us a message if you can't find it, and I'll link it to you right away. We're in the process of building a website, so you'll be able to do it through that as well. And we really, really appreciate any support that we can get. It really does go a long way.
Absolutely. We always give our money to good people who are doing great things. And what a transition. Thank you so much for being on the show today, both of you. I know you're so busy.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Absolute pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show next Friday, November 4th. Jen, you'll be producing that show?
Yes, I will. We're going to be having Joanne MacArthur talking about her project on animals. So she's a photojournalist, and she takes pictures of things that most of us don't get a chance to see. Animals in slaughterhouses, zoos, and aquariums.
Wow. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. To end the show today, we are playing a song dedicated to Mike Lanigan and the 21 cows he is giving a second chance to at his sanctuary. This song is called Second Chance by Stephen Gelman. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Second chance, you're giving me a second chance. I can feel the wind beneath my wings once again. And when no one else would care, or the others, they just stared. You took me in and you gave me a second chance. You see, once I soared high above the trees late at night, with only the moonlight to guide my way. Oh, but something went wrong and I was no longer strong. It looked like I was earthbound to stay. And I was covered in dry mud, I was weak, I was confused. I guess you could see I was quite a mess. And I had lost the sight from one of my eyes. Tell the truth, I feared for my life. But second chance, oh, you're giving me a second chance. I can feel the wind beneath my wings once again. When no one else would care, or the others, they just stare. You took me in and you gave me a second chance. Door. You reached out with loving hands and heart. And by the time the spring came, I'd regained all my strength. So you released me back into the night. And this is my thank you for all that you did and all that you give of yourself. To my sisters and my brothers of the night and of the wild, those whose lives you touch every day. We need a second chance, we all need a second chance to feel the wind beneath our wings once again. So whether you're not second chance. Sometimes all we really need is that second chance.